Hello, everyone. So welcome to this week's W3C CCG meeting. Today, we're very excited to have Hadrian from InRub and Solid and Apache Software Foundation, as well as Aaron, the co-chair of the Linked Web Storage group, W3C Linked Web Storage group, here to talk about the latest developments on Solid and decentralized data stores. But before we get into the main agenda, I just want to quickly go through the code of ethics and professional conduct reminder. Just want to make sure we have constructive and respectful conversations here. All right, a quick note on the intellectual property notes. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributions to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreements signed. If you have any questions about the W3C account or the W3C Community Contributor License Agreement, please feel free to reach out to any of the co-chairs. These meetings are automatically recorded and transcribed, and we will publish the meeting minutes, the audio and video recording in the next day or two. We use GG Chat to queue the speakers during the call to take minutes, and you can type in Q+ or Q- to remove from your from the queue, and you can type in Q? To see who is in the queue. I just want to take a quick moment for the introductions and reintroduction. So if you're new to the community or you haven't been active and want to re-engage, please feel free to just unmute and introduce yourself a little bit. Right. Next, just want to take a moment for the announcements and reminders. So if there's any new announcements, feel free to just type in Q+ or unmute. Great, please.
I just wanted to let folks know that for privacy-preserving forms of credentials, particularly like the BBS crypto suite, we've got some additional features that have advanced to working group documents over at the Cryptographic Forum Research Group, the CFRG of the IETF. So that's pseudonyms, which we all want to give us limited linkability so we can kind of be remembered, but not too much. And some extra security features, which go under blind BBS. So those have advanced to work group status. We also have for that, at the CFRG, we have public GitHub repos where people can now post issues and such like that. So I'll send out an email to the CCG with all those links. And I will be adding more explanatory text to both those documents, the more you want to see, and example cases. So we're making progress. We're going to get this nailed down so we can get the BBS spec out.
Thank you. Thanks, Greg. And by the way, we had Greg here and present about BBS Plus in the last few months. So you can just search in your email inbox if you are subscribed to the email list for Greg. And then the email is from me to see the recordings. Or if you cannot find the recording, just reach out to me because it is a must-watch sessions because I think Greg has done a very good job explaining what BBS Plus and commitment schemes and all these things. So thanks, Greg. All right, any other announcements or reminders? Any updates on the work items? All right, just preview what's coming. So next week we'll have Drummond here to talk about what used to be called Global Acceptance Network Trust Framework. Now I think it's called AIRA. And anyway, if I mispronounced it, I apologize for that. And then the week after that, we have Mike Porak, our former co-chair, to talk about Trade Verified, a verifiable traceability and AI in supply chain management. All right, last calls for introductions, reintroductions, announcements, or work item related stuff. Great. Well, let's get to the main agenda. So again, very, very happy here to have Hadrian and Aaron here to give some updates on the solid and decentralized data source. So Aaron, do you want to take it away? Actually, if you don't mind, just introduce yourself a little bit, and as well as your work, whether it's at InRump or the W3C Link Web Storage Group. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Harrison. Sure. So I will start off by just introducing myself. I'm Aaron Coburn. Along with Hadrian, I work at InRupt. I'm one of the co-chairs of the W3C Linked Web Storage Working Group. This is a working group that was started September of last year. So I'll get into some of the time frame that we have for this, but we're still, in a sense, getting ramped up in the working group. And before starting with the working group, I've been involved in the Solid world for 5, 6, 7 years, even before I came to InRupt. So I've worked on implementations, I've worked on specifications, so I've seen kind of a broad range of the issues that relate to this space. Let me just jump into, I have a couple of slides. This should be fairly quick. I don't want to jump on Hadrian's toes here. Link Web Storage, it's a working group. We've got a number of people who meet. We meet every week on Mondays. And I'll get into some of the, how you can participate. But really the high-level goals here have to do with web-based permission data storage. Secondarily, interoperability across this shared storage using different applications. So decentralization can be a part of this, but it's not necessarily a part of this. So I just want to make it clear that for some people, decentralization is really key when they talk about Solid, but it's not necessarily part of Solid, nor is it necessarily part of the LWS working group. That may be where we go, and I think we're going to largely be pulling from technologies that come out of the decentralization space. But just kind of keep in mind that some of the, based on the charter, based on where things currently stand, those are really some of the high level goals. We're still in the process of curating use cases and deriving requirements. But some of the high-level requirements that most certainly are going to be front and center for this working group involve global identifiers for entities, and that's not just data that you put in your storage, but agents, applications, other kinds of entities that work in that ecosystem. Secondly, global semantics for application interoperability. So like I said, in the high level goals, one of the key things here is making sure that you can separate data from applications such that you have different applications working on the same data and interoperating. That kind of is the goal there is really how can you help individuals or agents generally not become too tied to a particular application, or ensure that the data isn't too tied to a particular application. So that's where that interoperability comes in. And thirdly, and this is going to be really critical for the Link Web Storage, and I think is where a lot of the overlap with this group comes in, is having mechanisms for controlling access. This is both authorization and authentication. But if we don't have this mechanism, it's really hard to look at this about, in terms of how you can share data, how you can work with data across different apps in different domains with different security profiles. The current status, we were chartered in September of last year, so we're chartered through 2026. at the moment we've been collecting use cases. We're in the process of refining those use cases so that we can derive very specific requirements. And then, you know, we'll be prioritizing those requirements. Clearly, based on the use cases, not everything is going to be, is going to make it into the spec. So there will be some cutting that has to happen, but some of the main things that will be part of this relate to identity and putting authentication in with identity, because there's just so much overlap there. But identity broadly, authorization, and then ultimately a protocol that defines this. This is my last slide. So we meet weekly on Mondays at 10 a.m. Eastern time. So the timing always aligns with Boston time. So, you know, when there's a time change, that's what we're pinned to. Participation is open to all W3C members, just like any other working group. There's a link here. I can paste this into the chat in just a moment. It has more information about joining and about the calendar. Obviously, the minutes are all public, so anyone can access those. The other thing I wanted to mention is that everyone is welcome to contribute and discuss all of our use cases, which are currently in that first repository, that first GitHub repository, LWS UCS. A lot of the eventual work will go into the LWS protocol repository, but so far that's pretty empty. We just haven't gotten to the point where we're ready to start there. That is all that I have. So I'm happy to open it up for questions, or to move into the next stage.
Sounds good. Well, before we get to the questions, and by the way, I prepared a couple of questions, and if other people have questions, feel free to just type in Q+ to add yourself to the queue. But before we get to that, Hadrian, do you mind kind of do a quick introductions about yourself? That would be great.
Sure. And thanks, Harrison, for inviting us. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I don't know much about the CCG group, although I recognize quite a few names in the audience right now. Some of them from the IW crowd. I worked for INRAP for a bit over 2 years, and you mentioned that Aaron works there as well, but funny enough, actually Aaron and I bumped into each other a long time ago because we're both committers at the Apache Software Foundation. Aaron on Jenna, if anybody is interested, so turns out that we knew each other for quite a while. And I came with a different background. I was working for a while with Doc Searles at Customer Commons, and that's really how I got to be a user of sorts and an observer of Solid. We had many discussions about that, and I'm sure some of you are aware of those. And there was some frustration that Solid is not progressing well enough, and kind of by accident, I ended up working for INRAP. And I'm very happy that we're making quite a bit of progress, and I hope this Solid idea will catch up. Can I share some slides?
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
Okay, so let's see if I can share my screen. Can you see my screen? I think you can.
Yes.
Perfect. So I adapted some old slides. There's not much. And I'm going to echo something that Aaron said, but a bit from a different perspective, because Solid is actually not very easy to explain. It's pretty fundamental, and it's very hard to explain until you start using it, and then it becomes kind of obvious. And let's see, yes. So you probably know that Tim is the author of Solid. He started it around 2014-15, and it incubated at MIT, and then it became a community group at W3C in the last part of the decade. And then he started Indrupt to create, he's one of the co-founders, to create commercial products and foster adoption. And last year, as Aaron said, the LWS group was created because a community group cannot issue a final recommendation, W3C, as you know. So LWS is probably the final phase in getting this specification to become a real standard W3C final recommendation. And the motivations for doing this for team initially were the fact that the web, as good and adopted as it wasn't really writable, right? So he talks a lot about Web 3, as you probably know, but the Web 1.0 did not, it was only read-only, and it was actually great. It was very simple. It got adopted, but it wasn't writable. You could write with your own tools in the backend, the famous Apache web server, public HTML, you probably know all that, and tools came about and all that. But from the web, it wasn't really writable because it didn't handle identities, for instance. That was one of the main blockers. So anyway, Web 2.0 came around, and then what Tim calls Web 3.0, always emphasized not to be confused for Web3, the blockchain world. So you see on the slides that some of the frustrations came from the web stagnating and all that. However, the more important path for me was my work with DocSource and the work on the intention economy, which is, if you want, kind of a practical application of the technology, in the sense that in order for people to engage in economic transactions or any kind of transactions, socials, transactions and all, they have to exchange data, and data has to reside somewhere. And right now, because of communication issues, the easiest way to exchange data is being on the same platform, because exchanging data outside platforms requires protocols, which don't really quite exist. There are some, but nothing globally accepted. And that led to the idea, and by the way, last time, as far as I know, Tim and Doc met was at D-Web Camp 2 years ago. And actually, Tim said that Solid was in part inspired by Doc's ideas and his Intention Economy or Blue Train Manifesto, one of the books. So as I said, Solid is kind of hard to explain. So what it does, it tries to separate data from applications and from identities, as Aaron already mentioned. And it's a bit subtle. I don't know if I have a slide for that. Yes, it's this one. So today, the way applications are built is to have a front end and have the back end. And the front end has some, if you want, more or less unlimited access to the back end, and they are very tightly coupled. Solid proposes a turned around sort of model that decouples applications from data, allowing data to be stored in, if you want, this universal data storage, Solid calls them pods. And then from there, data being shared with applications and other entities, so that these pods become, if you want, a distributed, decentralized backend for any kind of application. And if anything, that's what I would like you to retain from today's presentation, because it has massive implications on a lot of things. For me, most importantly, is cost, because the way things are done today, it's very costly for applications to be built and, more importantly, maintained at scale. Aaron can tell you that Indrupt's largest customer is the government of Belgium or Flanders that provides a pod to every citizen. And I think what they realized is that if you have data, every citizen owns a pod and they have their data in the pod, then there is no need for data exchanges between different government agencies and all that, because all the data is in that reflects the relationship between the government and the citizen is in that pod. And the only thing they need to build now is new applications to add more data and benefit from the existing data. So that's a very interesting model that I hope you're going to think more about. And as I said, if anything, I would like this to be the conclusion of this conversation. And I think I'm going to stop here. There are some basic things here. Harrison said that we should expect this conversation to become quite technical. And, well, that's in part why Aaron's here, because he's way more technical than me. So I think we should open up the rest of the time for questions. Harrison, what do you think?
Yeah, that'd be great. Let me ask a clarification question. What's the difference between decentralized data stores versus like link web storage, or is it basically synonyms that means the same thing?
You mean linked web storage is the name of the group?
Link web storage and decentralized data store. Yeah. Like, is there a difference, or we're using these terms like interchangeably? Yeah.
So I should let Aaron take it, but linked web storage is the name of the work group at W3C. I don't think we use it in different contexts, whereas decentralized data store is a general concept. Aaron, please correct me if you have a different view.
Sure. Some of this, I think, comes from the history of Solid. Historically, Solid was built on a protocol called the Linked Data Platform, LDP. And so LDP itself is not particularly, it's not particularly decentralized at all. That's the first thing. And I don't think that decentralization really had much of a role in the development of LDP. So Solid's background really is more in the linked data sphere. Like I said before, there are ways of approaching Solid from a decentralized perspective, and you can certainly build Solid as a decentralized system, but it's not necessarily the case that all Solid systems or all systems that come out of the linked web storage community, working group, will necessarily be decentralized. What we tend to find even in INRUPT, and this is especially the case for the instance that Hadrian mentioned with the government of Flanders or Belgium, is there's more of a federated model that tends to be more of the interest for large enterprises, for governments, because they need to have a governance model that makes sense to them. So it's not so much decentralized necessarily, but it can be decentralized in the sense that you can have data all over the web. You can have lots of different pods. You can have your user identity decoupled. You can have, like, everything can be decoupled, but it's not necessarily the case that it's decoupled.
Got it. Dimitri, you're in the queue.
Hi, Hadrian. I just wanted to add a couple more words, specifically to Harrison's question on. So we have this vague notion of decentralized data storage. Where does Solid fit in that landscape? And the thing that is really important to think about with data storage is less centralized and decentralized, and more storing public data versus storing permissioned data. And there's a pretty fundamental divide in let's say, blockchain world or any sort of decentralized world. Pretty fundamental binary divide. All data storage, essentially is divided into either we're dealing with public only data, right? So that's IPFS, for example. Many of you are familiar with IPFS, Interplanetary File System, similar projects built on it like Ceramic and some others. And in general, we've seen a number of protocols that are like, okay, you know what? Permissioned data storage is hard. We're going to focus on public data, right? So for example, the DAT project, DAT, which I think evolved into Ocean Protocol. I forget what it got renamed to, but it got started with, we have public data sets from big science, right? So we've got like terabytes and petabytes of data. How do we store them efficiently in a decentralized way? But it's all public data. So that's one major category of writing and retrieving public data. And then the other one is permissions data. And the divide with permissions data storage essentially goes like this. There's a number of people who believe that you can ensure permission storage with encryption alone. So those are the number of projects that are like, we can do permissioned storage on untrusted nodes. Meaning anybody could spin up a storage node and we're gonna ensure access control via encryption alone. And the other half of that divide says, no, encryption alone can never be sufficient because all encryption has a half-life. You're essentially just temporarily storing data until it becomes public. So where Solid falls in is, and where, how it fits into the decentralized landscape is there's going to be some cases that deal with public data that can be fundamentally decentralized. There's some cases that are low enough threat that you can say, oh yeah, we're going to encrypt them. But really, it's temporarily encrypted until it becomes public. And then there's a number of cases where you want the data to be private. And that means combining optional encryption with permissioned access control. And that's where Solidly fits in. It's exactly for those applications where you can still be decentralized. You can still be decentralized. It can still be a network of nodes where you're storing and reading stuff from, but those nodes have to be trusted. Those nodes have to be able to enforce the access control, the authorization part of the protocol. So hopefully that puts it a bit more into perspective.
Thanks, Dimitri. Ted, do you have a comment?
Yeah.
For those,
Sorry. No.
I just wanted to say that for those who are not aware, Dimitri is one of the original parents of Solid at MIT.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow, that's cool. I feel like I've known Dimitri for a long time, but I didn't know that fact, so.
There
amazing.
Are a lot of parents of Solid.
So, yeah. So,
not just a couple.
And in LWS now we are probably starting to discuss DIDs, and Dimitri actually showed Solid working with DIDweb, I think, quite a while ago. So FYI, Dimitri.
Amazing.
Go ahead, Ted.
Just to summarize, Dimitri, your comment. So you're saying that Solid's positioning and unique value proposition is on permission storing permission private data in a decentralized way versus like IPFS is focused on public data. Is that correct?
That's not quite accurate.
Oh, sorry. Do you mind?
I would say that's roughly correct, but I'm certain Ted is going to give more details. Go ahead, Ted.
So having been involved in this space for quite a while, I was part of the LDP working group that Solid based itself, or Solid servers were initially based on. SOLID itself is more of a philosophy than an implementation or a specification. That philosophy is largely two things. First is re-decentralizing the web. And what that means is, instead of there being like three places where you can go to have your blog hosted, there are 3 million places that you can go to have your blog hosted. And it still can be visible, as visible as if it were just in those three. The way that gets accomplished is by federation, among other things, and aggregation. People who have dealt with newsreaders in the modern sense, where they're picking up RSS and Atom feeds and aggregating all those feeds into one long feed that you read. Sort of similar to how the old Usenet news groups used to work. The other piece is, if I can get my brain to cooperate, re-decentralization and making the web writable. It's always been globally readable, right? There's no purpose to having a web server except to let people read it. But also there needs to be a way for people to write it. And that writing takes many forms. One of the most commonly understood ways is wikis, like Wikipedia, where somebody creates a page on a topic and other people come in and say, no, wait a minute, that's not right, or that's not accurate, or here's a missing detail. And then somebody else comes in and says, well, this language is screwed up, so let me fix some of that. And somebody else comes in and says, well, this is only part of a bigger picture, so let me make some links back and forth. The whole web was designed to work that way. It hasn't been implemented that way because it gets hard quick. Wikis in themselves are hard to manage. You get graffiti, you get noise from a lot of sources that needs to be kept out or removed as you go. Now, Wikipedia used to be a lot more of a free-for-all for anybody who's been on the web for a while, and there could be editing wars going back and forth on a page for months before somebody came in and said, okay, this is clearly a point of contention, so there's going to be different articles that are branched from this to handle that contention. Or maybe somebody comes in and says, this is clearly false data, and this is clearly true data, and so we're also going to branch for that reason. And to claim one as false and the other a claim as true. But this is a big process, and it's evolving. The SOLID implementations that exist, SOLID server implementations, excuse me, there is no such thing as SOLID per se. It's not a monolith. It's a lot of things. As I said, it starts out as philosophy. The SOLID server implementations that exist are themselves sort of centralizing, because it is hard to aggregate data from a bajillion servers. It's difficult to present you with a view of a conversation if the software that is presenting that view has to pull all of the comments from all of the people's individual servers instead of pulling them all from one. Right? Facebook has, they have a bunch of machines, but they're all working together to look like one server. And it's all one big database. The vision of SOLID is to have one person's data in a space that, in multiple spaces that they control, that they say, that application can read and or write this data. That user can read and or write this data. All controlled by the individual who owns that data. This also gets complicated really quickly because, as that new slide shows, there's different kinds of data involved. There's the data that is between you and your bank or banks, multiple banks. There's the data that's involved in magazines or books or movies or music that you are mostly consuming, mostly reading. But occasionally you're going to have something to say about it. There's also government data, and the government or governments are the most consistent about wanting to keep your private data private and keeping the public's data public, and also wanting to keep their hands on all of it. There's a thing called the Library of Congress, which holds one instance of most published works in the United States. It grows infinitely. These works have not necessarily been digitized because the Library of Congress began a couple hundred years ago when there was no internet. There was no telephone. There was no recording system. It was all just paper. That's going to evolve over time. So this is a huge, big pile of question. There was a question a little bit ago about the relationship between solid and linked web servers. As I said before, the solid philosophy needs to be held by a number of different implementations. Solid servers, as they exist today, implement part of the solid vision, which might be considered a linked web server. Those solid servers, as they're branded right now, might be compatible with the linked web server specification as it gets developed. They also might not. So that's part of why the working group is linked web servers, which is talking about a style of server, and not the solid working group, which is a philosophical thing with a lot of different tendrils. I've said a lot of words, and hopefully they've made sense. I'll let somebody else go.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Ted. Hadrian, Aaron, anything to add?
Yes, I do. Thank you so much, Ted. Phenomenal insights. What I want to say is that at Apache Con, there was a party, and I think the guys in the board were asked to present slides that they never saw before. It was kind of for fun. And it feels like that's what Ted just did right now, because I don't think he saw these slides before. Are there any more questions, Harrison? I would really like to.
Yes,
I have the audience to get as much as they can from this meeting.
Yeah, I have a kind of a question, a little bit technical questions. Earlier, Ted, you were talking about the histories and the context. Now, a question is, isn't there a fundamental trade-off between latency performance versus decentralization and centralization, right? So to be specific, if you want to focus on decentralization and use federation, the application use federation to process this data, then you'll take a long time, right? Because you need to do aggregations and then maybe do joins in real time. It takes a while. But then if you actually aggregate all of them together, you'll to speed up the performance of such calculations, then you're centralizing the data into one entity on the aggregation layer, right? So how do you actually address this fundamental trade-off?
Can I take this one?
Yes. Uh-huh.
I'm sure Ted has other stuff to say. So to me, that's a massive red herring, because I worked in projects at massive scale in the past. And it's impossible to define what performance is, to whom, when, and all that. Even today, what we think happens on the web is completely different from what really happens. You have CDNs, you have all sorts of stuff. If you look at the searches, we have algorithms like MapReduce there are algorithms created all the time. So I don't think the way we think about performance should be a factor in the way protocols are built. And I'll stop here. Ted, I'm curious what your opinion is.
Thanks. Yes, there are trade-offs at all levels of this picture. In some cases, it may make sense to optimize for presentation. And in that case, it may make sense for all the data of some conversation or conversations to be held in a central location. Sometimes that data will be mirrors of what people hold in their individual locations. And this is part of what gives individuals control over their data at the same time as applications present it. We can sort of see this in action today in the way that I think both iOS and Android do this, allow you to echo your pictures from your smartphone to some storage place on the web, which you can also access through a web browser on a desktop or laptop machine. Those pictures do not exist only on your phone and then get presented through that central thing, nor do they only exist in that central thing and get presented by your phone. They exist in both places because that is the way to optimize the use of that data. The services that store the pictures centrally are keeping them as private as you set them. You know, sometimes, some of them let you do settings so that you can say, like, Joe can see these pictures, but Mary cannot. Others, and this will increase going forward, let you use a semantic description to say that my first cousins can see these pictures, but my grandparents cannot, for whatever reason. That kind of smart logic in setting permissions, it's called attribute-based access control. It is becoming a more attractive thing to use because the systems are getting better at being able to process it. This is sort of what you were saying, Adrian, about algorithms that get better. They do get better over time, but they're not there yet. And so some re-centralization of the re-decentralization is going to happen in order to make the presentation fast enough for the consumer. It's not to say there's some performance benchmark. It's to say that I don't want to wait more than 10 seconds for the first page of pictures to show up in my picture browser. Whether that's a web browser as it is today, or it's in iPhoto, which is the picture browser on macOS rather, or it's the pictures on iOS. There's a whole bunch of applications that present picture data. And this is another part of the solid vision, is to be able to say, I want to use iOS's photos and I want to use macOS's iPhoto on the same data files. Down the road, I may want to use a different application. I don't know what the name of it is on Android, but the data files are likely to be the same, whether they're JPEGs or GIFs or PNGs or something else. Those are standardized data formats which multiple applications know how to read and write and interoperate over. Pictures are a nice, easy example of this. It gets more complex when you start talking about financial data, because there are different schemas, different ontologies, different vocabularies that are used to describe that financial data. Having multiple applications able to read and write that data or read or write that data requires some decisions about what vocabulary or ontology to use, or at least what are the connections between the multiple vocabularies that exist. What al-same-as relations are there? And I throw that in because it's an important thing that people, as we get further into the weeds, need to understand. Al-same-as is a relationship that says that the subject and object of the statement, including al-same-as, the subject and object entities are the same. What does that mean? The identifier in the subject position and the identifier in the object position co-reference the same entity. It's like, my name is Tall Ted. My name is also Ted Thibodeau. Those two identifiers are in a al-same-as relationship, except, of course, that those are just strings. They're not URIs, and that's deeper into the weeds than we need to get at this moment. The challenge at hand is to build enough standardized vocabularies that enough application implementers are able to use, that enough applications will be produced, that enough users will choose to use or want to use over the data that they have or will have, and whether they have it on their local pod or it already exists in some silo on the web or it exists on a local floppy disk, right? All of these things are valid. The challenge is to have the vocabularies be understood by enough applications that they can open enough files that there becomes a critical mass of users, applications, and data that they can interoperate, that everything is loosely coupled. What does loosely coupled mean? Loosely coupled means that the banking application can read any banking data, not just the data produced by the bank that produced that application. It means that I can decide that I'm changing banks and all of my old data can move with me. Or at least my new bank can read all of my old data and understand it. Translations are an element of loose coupling. The best loose coupling is you can change things on the fly as you care. And that's like using a different web browser. There are six of them, give or take. Six major web browsers that you can use to read any website on the web. Some are a little more bleeding edge than others, and so browsers move faster or sites move faster, but pretty much loosely, they work together. And you can change from Chrome to Safari to Firefox all on a whim. It's not going to change anything. You take the link of a page you're looking at and copy it from one browser to another, and it's still going to work. It's going to look roughly the same. It might go a little faster, a little slower. It might show some data a little more pretty than the other that to your eyes, but somebody else likes the other. And that's all fine because these are loosely coupled. They only connect when they need to.
And again, Ted. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. I just want to do a time check. Do you have one last comment?
No, I'm good.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thanks, Ted. So, Hadrian, I know you have other slides that you want to share. So, do you want to proceed? Yeah.
No, actually, that's the last one.
Got it. Okay, cool. So, earlier, Ted.
We can take more questions, Harrison.
Got it. Okay, so I think earlier, Ted actually mentioned a good point where to make sure that this dream comes true, you need to have this ecosystem and where a lot of pods are going, basically a lot of adoptions, right? Where it creates a positive reinforcement loop. So my question is like, what are the market adoptions right now and what are the challenges and what can we do to actually drive more adoption?
Oh man, actually Ted said it very well. I like what he said, although it's a bit theoretical. So this is a very long conversation. In reality, I don't know, but I was thinking what was the motivation of people paying for ISPs, let's say back in the 90s, because they didn't provide anything except access, right? You had to have that connectivity to the internet to then access websites and data and all that. And that's in a way the case for Solid. You need to have enough either solid hosting providers or easy to set up like the Apache browser, the Apache web server was, technology to install on your LAN to host solid pods. And then you have to have that critical mass of applications that use this data from multiple pods because you will share data with your family or communities and they will use data from your pods. But these applications would provide value for the people who use them. And that involves writing as well, like both Dimitri and Ted said. And once you have that critical mass and the data resides in the solid pods, as I said, this would create a sort of universal, distributed, decentralized backend. So people will basically only write applications or algorithms to benefit from this data. Of course, agents are a hot topic. AI is a very hot topic, especially given the privacy requirements. Wallets are also hot, and I saw Alex is on the call. She's at MIT, and they so Inrupt donated one of the wallet projects that are based on solid pods at the Open Wallet Foundation, and Alex leads a group at MIT that did the same. So wallets, I think, are going to be very hot. And in terms of governance and acceptance, I'm not sure who mentioned GAN earlier today, but we became members of GAN as well. And that's another thing to look at in terms of governance and promoting more the idea of, they were called Global Acceptance Networks, and now they are IRA because it was incorporated in Switzerland under this name recently. So I'm not sure if I gave you an answer, Harrison, but I think these would be the milestones or the points to look for.
Got it. Well, earlier Aaron shared that Inrupt has a very satisfied customer with Flemish and Netherlands government. So what's the user value proposition that they chose to use solid Inrupt versus other types of solutions?
Well, I don't think there are other types of solutions with these characteristics. But Aaron, do you want to talk more about that?
Sure. I think one of the value propositions has to do with really this question of data sharing. So building an ecosystem where more innovation can happen. So what the government of Flanders is trying to do is create a structure where the data becomes available for entities, you know, sort of allowed entities to write applications that can interact with the data that's really controlled by users in this case, and then provide additional benefit beyond what the, any individual, governmental agency would be able to provide. So that's the basic value proposition that they're going with. And, you know, part of it has to do with rather than having a lot of siloed kinds of government data, they would have a structure of data where the data itself becomes more of an object for sharing, you know, across these specifically permission sharing across these different agencies.
Aaron, may I point out something? It may not be obvious. The fact that you have control over who the data is shared with, the government data in the pod, doesn't necessarily mean that you can alter or even see that data. So imagine it's a criminal record. It's not like, oh, it's in my pod, I'm going to erase my criminal record now. So I'm not sure if that's obvious, but permission to access doesn't necessarily mean that you, the owner of the data, can modify it.
Indeed. Sorry. It's not as though I can just tell my banking pod that I have a lot more money than I currently have. Like there are a lot of ways to achieve that in terms of, as an example, verifiable credentials or other kinds of cryptographic mechanisms to show that, you know, has a particular bit of data been tampered with, or, you know, who signed for this particular data. So there are a lot of ways of going about making sure that a particular entity is authoritative for a particular bit of data.
Cool. Thank you. One last question from the community, if there's any. All right. I think we're at time. Just want to thank you, Hadrian, and thank you, Aaron, for jumping on. This is a great conversation. I feel like I need to invite you guys to jump on in the next few months to do a follow-up, because there's still some questions that I think I have that I haven't been able to ask. So thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for inviting us.
Thank you very much.
All right. This concludes this week's CCG meeting. So thanks for attending.